This is Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk. Today, I wish to say thank you to all of the African-American men and women in my life who have mentored me and welcomed me into leadership in the boating and sailing communities. Thank you to Lenora Clark, Staff Commodore of the Pacific Interclub Yacht Association, who greeted me as a new delegate from Berkeley Yacht Club years ago, and not only makes me feel welcome every time I see her, but worked with me to organize the USPS Building Bridges of Peace special postal cancellation that acknowledged the 98th anniversary of the PICYA. Lenora has been involved in leadership and boating advocacy at the state and national level for years. Thank you to current PICYA Commodore Robert Willis, who is also a member of the Ebony Boat Club founded in 1987, an active African-American boat club in Northern California that has members from ages 20 to 70 years old. This morning, I was thinking about the collegiate sailing team at Hampton University in Virginia. Hampton University is a traditional African-American school that grew from its first teacher, Mary Peake, in 1861. It has a proud tradition of education that started with some courageous people with vision and dedication and became a well-established accredited university whose alumni are a proud part of our American history. I also wish to warmly acknowledge Marie Rogers, who accepted my idea to create Sailsport Talk as the first continuous programming for sailing in international 24/7 sports talk broadcasting. Marie introduced me to key people who continue to this day to be a support to our programming. She and I have had marvelous ongoing conversations about current events, past history, and on the subject of community sailing. Thanks to Kevin Battle, Commissioner of the U.S. Rugby Division 1A, who has been a guest on our show and a sailing enthusiast with an impressive history of leadership in U.S. rugby. Thanks to Postmaster Abraham Cooper, another guest on our show whom I've worked with on a number of occasions in his roles as Postmaster of San Francisco. He is now in leadership at USPS in Washington, D.C. I am the grateful recipient of knowledge, introductions, and mentorship of these wonderful men and women. And I just want to say thank you for your leadership, your warmth, and friendship. At this time in our history, I wanted to give acknowledgement to these people without whom I could not have done what I do today. This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk.
All right, a little crisscross applesauce for you. It's Tuesday at 9:40. That means it's time to check in with the co-host of this segment with me, Karen Lyle, for SailsportTalk.com. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing great, Rick. How are you doing?
Not too shabby. Let's bring in our guest, and it's Donald Lawson. And Donald Lawson, very experienced in the field of sailing, and he's here to tell us that it is possible to sail for a living as a hobby or for the glory. That's a very wide it's a very wide angle to look at it. But Donald, let's just talk about how you got started on the waves and decided to make it your livelihood.
Yeah, well, first, thank you guys so much for having me this morning. I hope you guys are doing well in the heat out there. And it's pretty hot over here as well. So stay cool out there, right? Hop on the boat, go in the water. But how I got started was I was a young man about 9 years old, and I got to go camping, got to go sailing at the Living Classroom Foundation in Baltimore. And that set me up for a career in sailing because the captain of the boat told me, a young black kid in Baltimore, that I could sail around the world. And so I started pursuing that career immediately after that. And I was able to join programs with the Naval Academy and Downtown Sailing Center and U.S. Sailing. And it all propelled me to where I am today.
What is it about Chesapeake Bay that is, every group of body of water has its own personality. How would you describe Chesapeake Bay getting started there?
Yeah. Well, the bay is pretty massive. It's pretty vast. And so there's lots of coves and little towns all over it. Of course, it's brackish water, fresh mixture of fresh and salt water, and so we have a lot of different sea life there. But the weather can be really extreme, and because it's not extremely deep, I think the deepest part is like 175 feet deep, the waves can get pretty big in the storms, and it's very easy to get knocked into a shoal. So your navigation skills develop really quickly because current and weathers are always changing there.
Donald, you've come a long way, and now you're preparing for the Vendée Globe, which is just a very challenging race. It's going to be, we've been covering it here on SailSport Talk, and we just talked to Pip Hare not too long ago and have been covering what happened in the last Vendée Globe. I think Rick has also been involved in covering it since before even I became part of SailSport Talk. But now you're going to be involved in it. Tell us about your preparations for that.
Yeah. So the Vendée Globe, for those who don't know, is a solo around-the-world race. And it starts in France, Vendée Province of France. Next one starts November of 2024. And generally speaking, you get about 30 boats, 60-foot boats, and you depart from France, you go around the world, around Antarctica, and back up the Atlantic Ocean. And so my introduction to the race was back in 2000, where a very famous lady named Dame Ellen MacArthur finished second place in that race. And I got to meet her in 2002 in Baltimore on her boat Kingfisher. And from there, you know, I became so inspired to actually use this platform, the Vendée Globe, as my platform to go around the world. And I got to meet people like Mike Golding, who was a big influence for me as well. And then my mentor, the guy who really pushed me down the path, was the first American to ever finish the race, Bruce Schwab. And I got to meet him. Well, first I harassed him and followed him around, but once he opened up to me, I started working for him on his boat, and I got to sail with him and do all kind of passages and stuff. And so from there, it was about building up a team. And so one of the most important things that we were able to do is secure a partnership with a company called Whitecap out of the UK. And they specialize in the Mocha racing, over 60 racing. And so with their partnership, I'm going to be able to actually enter that race in 24 and be as prepared as possible.
Yeah, it was about, 15, 16 years ago, Bruce would check in with me via satellite phone during the Vendée once a week. And it was very interesting to, you know, he's very chill, as you know, but to hear his different moods, and sometimes you could tell he was depressed, sometimes you could tell he was a little more awake. Now, you think, Donald, that you can shave a month off the record. How are you going to do that?
Well, so we have to look at the record as a total number. So I believe, I hope I said this correctly, Armel Leclerc's record is 73 days, I believe, for a second navigation. Rich Wilson went around the planet twice, and he was able to break Bruce's record of 107 days, the other day 105. And so the goal is to close that gap between the world record and the American record. And we have the skill, we have the technology, we have the ability to do it. And so if we get a good boat, which we already have a boat, but we're trying to acquire an even faster boat. If we're able to get an even faster boat, we should be able to compete on the top level with the French and the British sailors.
But, I mean, is it just, are you going to go a different route? Are you going to go twice as fast? Because I could see, hey, I can cut a few days, but 30 days, you must have a plan, or is it a secret plan, Donald?
No. So, well, there's always strategy involved, but you got to look at it from the standpoint, the American times were set in the early 2000s. So think back to the car you owned back in 2004, right? That probably would not compare to your car today. And so the technology is a lot more advanced, and the knowledge is a lot more advanced as well. What I'm hoping to do sometime next year is actually go around the planet on a different boat to set the American record beforehand. But as a backup, the Vendée 2024 will be the event I actually use.
Well, and this is the American record because there haven't been that many Americans in comparison to people from Europe who competed in the Vendée Globe. How many people, you know, have been competing in the American, represent the American team in the Vendée Globe that are the people you admire?
Yeah, so there's only been three that have attempted to do it. Mike Plant was the first, and he would have been the first one to finish. But he had some issues down there in New Zealand. and got a little outside assistance, so he had to finish outside of the race because the race is an unassisted race. And then, of course, we lost him 4 years later when he was trying to go start again. And then Bruce came along as number two American to try, and then Rich Wilson completed it twice. And so I would be, then in that case, the fourth American to go after it, and hopefully the third American to finish successfully.
A couple more questions for Donald Lawson, Rick Tittle, and Karen Lyle with you. The thing, you know, you think about all the perils and dangers of the sea and the equipment and everything else, the food, but what about the mental aspect for you and the loneliness? We know sometimes people will take a dog or a cat, or I mean, what are you going to do for as far as the mental aspect?
Well, for me, one of the most important things I have is I have a pretty extensive archive collection of images and videos that I take with me. And for those who don't know me, you know, I'm married to my high school sweetheart, and we've been together, just the two of us, for a long time. And so the person I'll miss the most would be her, because we're never really apart. We're always together. And so fortunately today, with all the new satellite technology we have and the WhatsApp technology we have, I can talk to her pretty much indefinitely around the world now. Hopefully by 24, we'll have a video chatting ability as well. But as far as little knickknacks I'm going to carry with me, so my cat passed away last year, so I'm going to take imprint of her paw with me around the world. Mm. And so I'll feel like part of my family is with me all the way around.
Donald, tell us a little bit about your boat that you have now, the one that has all of these eco-friendly systems on it.
Yeah. So right now, the Whitecap has an Open 60 of the 2008 vintage available that we're going to use. That boat is currently halfway eco-friendly. It has clean energy products, but it still has a diesel engine on board. And the goal is to install a full electric system on board. And for those who don't know, and I mean, this is not a plug, but this is a factual product, Ocean Vault makes an electric motor that can help you get out of marinas, but then when you're underway, it turns into a hydro generator. And so as the boat is moving, you're generating power the entire time. And if you add that to the solar panels and the wind vanes we're going to have, we actually have a pretty robust system. And today, you know, compared to back in the day when you only had a diesel engine or a generator, if one of those died on you, then your race is over. But now there's so much redundancy with all this clean energy that we actually have at our disposal, I can lose the hydrogen generator, I can lose the wind vane, and still have, you know, the solar panels. I still can have a biodiesel on board. So one of the most important things is that redundancy produces opportunity, and that's kind of how we're approaching it.
You know, there are certain points when you're near the coast and help is just a chopper away. What are some of the places, like maybe around the Cape, some of the places where, you know, if you do get into a spot of trouble, you could be looking at hours and hours before someone can get to you?
Oh, well, days and days too, right?
Wow.
It's hard to imagine for most folks, but there's no roads on the ocean. I mean, we have sea lanes that we traditionally follow based on currents and winds. But once you're at sea, once you cross that pretty much 20-mile distance from land, the Coast Guards can't really help you. It's your competitors who become your rescue team if you get in trouble. And so if you, for those who watched the last edition of the race that just ended, one of the boats, one of the top boats, PRB, snapped in half and had to get rescued by one of his competitors. And the irony is that that guy who rescued him got rescued a couple years before on a different boat at the same time. So it comes down to it that part of the job is to survive and be smart on your decision making. And so, unfortunately, in the last edition, most of the boats that didn't make it, which was like four or five of them, all didn't make it from one section of the ocean. And from studying the currents and stuff, we kind of have an idea why. And so to learn from others so that you can maximize your opportunity to be successful.
That was an amazing rescue, by the way.
Yes.
I watched the video footage that we were able to get from the boats and the story and see that reunion of the two, you know, each knowing what the other, you know, who the other was,
Bender,
that they were able to be there for each other. And that's one of the advantages, I guess, in doing a race rather than just doing it all by yourself, is you have support of a team on land that gives you some instruction and help when things go wrong. And you also have the other people who are within a relative distance of where you are that can come and help you out. How do you prepare for a race and still have, some safety net for yourself?
Yeah, and yes, you're 100% right. Races allow you to have a support network around you. But most of the work I do and will continue to do will be solo passages. And so the Vendée happens to be the race I'm going to do. That's the highest profile event I'm going to do. But most of my career, particularly moving forward, will be dedicated to solo record passages, which is just me in a boat in a course. And so the good thing is that there's no need for a widow's wharf to watch from a shore anymore. You have tracking devices and GPS systems and cameras where you can see what I'm eating for dinner. And so I'm not as alone as, let's say, you were 20 years ago. So for me, the focus is generally on trying to get to a certain waypoint, certain place, and getting there as safely as possible. And so I'm a pretty focused and driven person anyways. Some people say I'm a little too focused, but at the end of the day, I always come home for what I do. And so if I sense that there's a situation that requires me to back off, then you back off. You don't try to be heroic and muscle your way through.
That's Donald Lawson. Donald, we'll check in before you leave, man, but keep us up to speed, and best of luck flying the flag for us out there on the open waves, man.
Absolutely. Red, white, and blue out there. I'm very proud to carry the flag and try to set some more American records.
Great stuff. Karen, we'll check in with you next week, kiddo.
Sounds great. Thanks, Donald.
I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.